So I was thinking about Caleb this evening, and I was thinking, gee, just think, here's a guy, him and Joshua, of course, were spies into the land, right? That the Lord would send them into the land to spy out the land and to come back with some, you know, with what actually exists there in the land. They weren't necessarily to come back with fear, as many did. But I was thinking about how they came back, and there was only two of them out of the 12, right, that decided that they would want to advance, you know, and how much, I was thinking, I wonder how much ridicule that they took on themselves because of their stance for moving ahead in the Lord, you know. And I think of us believers as the Lord would ask us to step out, you know, even within the church body itself, sometimes there's ridicule of, why would they ever do that, you know? Are they crazy for doing that, you know? Or, you know, you get some folks that just, you know, don't understand it, you know, don't understand your calling or whatever. But sometimes the Lord has us do difficult things, right? And sometimes we have to stand in the midst of all the no's and say, we're for the Lord, you know. We want to step out into this place in which the Lord has called us. And I think as we look at this, we see that there is a blessing here on Caleb's life that occurs from the Lord because of his faithfulness, right? Because of his, I don't know how else to put it, but wholeheartedness. You know, sometimes I think we give 50% to the Lord. You know, we say, well, Lord, you can have this portion and that portion, but I'm not willing to step outside that. You know, I'm not willing to go into the land where the giants are. You know, I'm just not willing. You know, and so sometimes I don't think we're wholehearted. You know, so the encouragement tonight from Caleb, I think, if we had to sum it all up and stop right here, I think it's wholeheartedness, right? Where's our hearts at? You know, where's our commitment at? You know, and I think that's always a challenge to us anyways, is our commitment to our job, is our commitment to the Lord, is our commitment to the church, our commitment to these other activities that are in our lives, you know. What is our level of commitment? And is it, like Caleb, wholehearted? So, anyways, we'll see, I think, some of that here. So in verse 1 there of chapter 14, it says, these are the areas in which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar, the priest, Joshua, the son of Nun, the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel, distributed as an inheritance to them. Their inheritance was by lot, as the Lord had commanded by the hand of Moses for the 9 tribes and a half. So here we see Joshua, Eleazar, and the representatives from each of the tribes distributing the inheritance. And remember, last week we talked about inheritance versus possession. An inheritance doesn't necessarily mean that you have possessed it. And we'll see that in certain areas of the tribes' lives, even as we go through these scriptures tonight, is that sometimes they didn't always possess it fully, you know, as the Lord had intended it. So we see the division here of the land, right? Last chapter, chapter 13, we talked about the divisions of the land that was east of the Jordan, right? When we talked about Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. Well, now we're on the west side, and they're dividing up the inheritance on the west side. In verse 3, it says, for Moses had given the inheritance the two tribes and a half a tribe of the other side of the Jordan. But the Levites, he had given no inheritance among them. Remember, we talked about the Levites, right? We said, hey, the latter part of chapter 13 there, it would say that he was their inheritance. Just as we, right, are called to be priests, you know, to the priesthood in a sense, we're his, you know, he is our inheritance for sure. For the children of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they gave no part to the Levites in the land except cities to dwell in, with their common land for their livestock and their property. As the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land. I think one of the important things here is, as you look at Eleazar and Joshua and the representatives of the tribes and the division of the land, this division of the land was a command given by Moses to distribute this land to Israel. It wasn't man-made, you know. It wasn't man-made. It wasn't, you know, they should have it because somehow they have proven themselves to man that they should have it. No, this is a command of God. You know, and of course, when we see a command of God, we should never question it. This is something that God rules on. We should just trust in it, right? So here they, in verses 3 through 5 is just an explanation here of the 9.5 tribes' inheritance. If you really look at it, we could really, a lot of times when we think of the tribes, we always think of that there's 12 tribes, right? But there's really 13 tribes, right? Because we got, it's all the sons of Jacob, right? And then Joseph has Ephraim and Manasseh, right? And then we always leave out, because they didn't have any inheritance of the land, was Levi. And so we always leave that out, but they really are there, you know? So, and, you know, as I think about the inheritance of the tribes and how, yes, they inherited this land, but the greatest inheritance, in my estimation, was the Levites, right? They didn't just get genes, they got his genes, right? they inherited everything, right, that the Lord had for them, right? He was it. You know, and sometimes I just think, why can't we be like that, Lord, where you're just it? You know? Don't we get all, sidelined by just the insignificant stuff of the world? We do, I think. I know I do. I just get caught up in it and frazzled or whatever the point may be, but boy, wouldn't it be nice if we just relaxed and just understood the inheritance that we really have in him, for sure. Verse 6, then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, you know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought back word to him as it was my heart. He's 40 years old, you know, so 40 years, you know, he's, you know, I think we get into it, he's 86 or 85 or something like this later on, it says. But Joshua was 100, and God said he was very old. So Caleb at this stage, I guess, is just a kid, right? But it says, nevertheless, my brethren, who went up with me, made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed, with a W, wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses sworn on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord. So here is Caleb, as we talked, one of the spies there, one of the first that went into the land to spy out the land that we even studied back in Numbers 13. And it was his, you know, it was his willingness, right? He had a choice to follow the Lord or not to follow the Lord. But he chose to follow the Lord because he understood that the Lord was truth. And of course, Joshua was the other one that would also want to go into the land. And when they looked at the land, they saw the same land as everybody else. They saw the giants in the land. They saw the prospering of the land, right? The big grapes, you know, that we always think about, you know. But they saw all that. They saw the same thing. But what was the difference? What was the difference, right? It was because they had a willingness to follow the Lord. They had this willingness. And so, how do we become holy, holy? Holy with a W and holy with an H? Well, the holy, I think, becomes a willingness thing. You know, are we going to do it, you know, W-H-O-L-L-Y? Are we going to, that's a willingness. And then the holy with an H, H-O-L-Y, comes because we're willing in that relationship, right? We're following him. We're emulating him, right? We're getting closer to him. We're understanding who he is, right? It was interesting this Tuesday, you know, Adam had the first teen uproar, we're calling it, just because we want the kids to cry out to the Lord, right? We want them to learn to cry out to the Lord for answers. So many times does the church limit the kids? Like, you know, you don't need to know the answer to that question because you just need to take it by faith. And that's good and everything. But God wants him to be known, right? So Adam said, what do you know about God? When you think of God, what do you think about, right? And so some of the essence of God, he listed. And I just thought it was pretty cool. I think every adult should do that. We should just sit down with ourselves and say, what do I think about my God? And then, after we're all done listing all them essence of God, say to yourself, well, then, why don't I wholly follow him? You know, why don't I? If I really believe that, why don't I wholly follow him? You know? And so, and just full out, right? 100%. Why don't I do it? If that's really what I believe. But I think with Caleb, see, he didn't look at the giants in the land. You know, he loved the sense that there was some goodness in the land there. But he was faithful to the Lord. And he knew the Lord would strengthen him, right? He knew that the Lord would fight the battles. Joshua knew the Lord would have to fight the battles. And certainly, when they came into the land, they learned that how true that had to be, right? As he went into the land and they conquered Jericho, as they went into the land and they got defeated by Ai because of the flesh, you know? And so they learned those things. But after that, you see Joshua and Israel just sticking tight to the Lord in battle. And he fought the battles, right? Last time, I think we talked about Joshua winning 31 battles there. He didn't win it. He won one battle. And that battle was over the flesh, right? And that was only because the Lord strengthened him to win. And then the Lord just provided, won the battles just because Joshua being faithful, you know. So just faith in the Lord. You know, Caleb just had faith in the Lord. You know, we see the lack of faith in Israel. We see them between when Caleb was 40 years old and this moment in time, there was that experience in the wilderness there, right? That they experienced that drought, in a sense, in their spiritual life. That walk in the wilderness where they just floundered all over the place, you know, in their faith in God, really. You know, why, Lord, did you bring us out of Egypt just to kill us here in the desert, in the wilderness? You know, just a lack of faith. So now, you know, as we get into this, so we find out that, you know, Caleb being from the tribe of Judah, we find that he's the first one here to, at least on the west side of the Jordan, to actually have his inheritance, you know, to be given an inheritance. And why is that? I just think God was blessing him for being faithful, you know, because he was wholly following him, right? Verse 9 there, he says, So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord. I think he was talking about where his feet as a spy went in and landed. You know, where he went in and he stepped upon that. Moses was saying, just because of your faithfulness. Because you wholly followed after God. I don't think Caleb was necessarily saying this from a standpoint of pride here. You know, you could say, well, the guy mentioned this twice in the last verse or two. Maybe he was getting a little pride here, but I think he was just making a point. You know, it's important. It's important to follow the Lord. And we'll see too that he follows him with boldness, right? It wasn't a lazy following or a pulling along following, but he followed him with boldness. You know. So verse 10, and now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses, while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, here I am, this day, 85 years old, spring chicken. As yet I am strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and coming in. Now therefore, give this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as a inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron formerly was Kirjath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. And the land had rest from war. So interesting here, you know, 45 years later, after Moses had spoken these words, and now after the wandering in the wilderness here had taken place, Caleb said, 45 years later, I'm 85 years old, yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. And we know that obviously he's an older man, right? I mean, I remember when I was 20 years old. Not really. I just remember that I probably was, since I'm 51 today. I've got enough intelligence left, I guess, enough brain cells to figure out that I was probably 20 at one point. But I do remember a little bit. is that I thought ahead as I was 50, and I was someday I'll be 50, and I was thinking I'll probably still feel the way I do, and you know what, I don't necessarily, my elbow's killing me usually about every day now, you know, it just aches. And today I was trying to solder this copper pipe, and I had my torch in this hand, and I'm holding it. I'm okay if I'm in one position. It's when I go to move it, you know, and I take my torch down, and I feel like that Tin Man. Remember the Tin Man on Wizard of Oz? You know, you have to oil the joints. That's how I feel. But anyways, certainly Caleb wasn't, I don't think, being funny here and saying, well, I'm as fit as a fiddle. I'm as I was 40 years old. What he was saying spiritually, he says, I'm still prepared to do war. I'm still strengthened in the Lord, you know. I'm ready. I'm enduring, you know, because of the strength of the Lord. I mean, verse 12, you know, you can only say, you know, what he's saying there. He's saying, hey, Lord, let's get it on, you know. Let's do this thing, you know. That's what we always talk about, right? Let's do this thing. You know, he had the strength of the Lord. He was energized by the Lord himself. I mean, this guy, 85 years old, says, give me this mountain. You know, he actually remembered back when Moses was sending them into the land, and he was like, I remember God was going to give me this mountain. He didn't lose faith in the 45 years. He gained faith. Right? He was strengthened by the Lord, and all of a sudden, now he's going here into the place in which he knew God had promised him. He had trusted God. And he says, I want that mountain where them giants are, Lord. Where them giants are. And in verse 14, of course, the reason why he wanted it was that he was wholly following the Lord. He just, you know, this was making the difference in his life. You know, it wasn't how much I read. It wasn't the books that I read. It wasn't the people that I listened to. It was who I was following and where my heart was in that following. You know, as I follow the Lord, am I full-heartedly going for it, or am I just kind of a passive person? I just kind of lay back and let the canoe take the current, you know. But I think for the difference in Caleb's life, as he really seized God's promise there, was that he was wholly and fully engaged with God, right? He was really attached to him, you know. And I envy him. I really do. I look at it and I say, Lord, am I that attached to you? Am I that holy, Lord, that when I follow you, am I easily pulled off my path, you know? As I've asked you to guide me, Lord, as I know that you're leading me that way, do I start to do these sideshows, you know? Do I start to, does something else get my attention, Lord, and just pull me off from that path, you know? I think that's what Caleb had going for him. fully engaged, you know? You know, you could say, you know, you look at Billy Graham, right? I mean, Billy Graham, you know, he never let off the accelerator, and I don't think he has, right? Physically, yes. Spiritually, I think he's still in tune, you know? But I, just to focus, Lord, I know this is where you want me to go. I know this is what you want me to say. You know, just that whole focus on the Lord, just really attached to Him and His will. Ah, here we are, verse 15, or chapter 15. Huh? All right. The land of Judah. So this was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah according to their families, the border of Eden at the Edom at the wilderness of Zin. Southward was the extreme south boundary, and their south border began at the shore of the Salt Sea from the bay that faces southward. Then it went out to the southern side of the ascent of Akrabim, passed along to Zin, ascended on the south side of Kadesh Barnea, passed along Hezron, went up to Adar, and came around to Karkai. From there it passed toward Esmon and went out to the brook of Egypt and border ended at the sea. This shall be your southern border. The east border was the Salt Sea as far as the mouth of the Jordan, and the border of the north quarter began at the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan. The border went up to Beth Hagla and passed north of Beth Arba. And the border went up to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. Then the border went up toward Debir from the valley of Achor, and it turned northward towards Gilgal, which was before the ascent of Adummim, which is on the south side of the valley. The border continued toward the waters of En-Shemesh and ended in En-Goel. And the borders went up by the valley of the son of Hinnom to the south slope of the Jebusite city, which is Jerusalem. The border went up to the top of the mountains that lie before the valley of Hinnom, westward, which is at the end of the valley of Rephaim, northward. Then the borders went around from the top of the hills of the foundation of the waters of Nephtoah, and extended to the cities of Mount Ephron. And the borders went around to Bala, which is Kirjath Jearim. Then the borders turned westward from Bala to Mount Seir, passed along the sides of Mount Jearim on the north, which is Chalcedon, went down to Beth Shemesh and passed on to Timnah. And the borders went out to the sides of Ekron north, and the borders went around to Shikron, passed along the Mount Bela and extended to Jabneel, and the borders ended at the sea.
And the west border was the coastline of the great sea. This is the boundary of the children of Judah all around according to their families. So that's a lot of boundaries and a lot of borders. So if you look at Judah, one of the things that you notice is that the inheritance, right? And remember, this is Caleb's tribe. One of the inheritance there was obviously the city of Jerusalem, right? And so it's looking back on it, maybe at that point in time, they didn't realize what Jerusalem was going to become, but it's, now we look at it and go, wow, the encapsulated within Judah was Jerusalem. You know? So even though, you read through this, it's a challenge, to pronounce half the names, and then it's a challenge to stay engaged in a sense as you're going through it, right? But it meant something. It gave the inheritance to the tribes. It gave boundaries around the tribes. This is yours, God was saying. And this is yours to possess, right? This is your inheritance, but this is yours to possess. And then a promise there for Judah. And then, of course, we get into verse 13 there. Now Caleb and the sons of Jephunneh, he gave a share among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron. Why don't they just say Hebron? It's so much easier, right? Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak, which from there, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. And he went up from there to the inhabitants of Debir. So here we have the allotment, you could say, for Caleb and his family there. And then in verse 16 it says, and Caleb said, he who attacks Kirjath Sefer and takes it, to him I will give Aksa, my daughter, as wife. So it's an interesting thing here that Caleb does. See, not only does Caleb do what the Lord wills wholeheartedly, but he also encourages, I think, he encourages others, right, to be wholehearted and to do it boldly, right? And then it says, Othniel, the son of Kenzah, the brother of Caleb, took it and gave him Haxa, his daughter, as wife. Now it was so, when she came to him, that she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. So she dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, what do you wish? And she answered, give me a blessing, since you have given me land in the south. Give me also springs of water. So he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. So not only do we see boldness here in Othniel, who gets Caleb's daughter because of his accomplishments there. We also see the boldness in his daughter, right? In order to asking of her father a blessing, and of course she would get the upper springs. It kind of gives me the impression of us Christians that sometimes we don't always go before the throne of God very boldly.
You know, we think that somehow we don't have a privilege there. Well, it says, you know, that we, because of what he's done for us and because we've accepted him, now we have this we're able to go boldly before the throne of grace, you know, and ask, it's got to be according to his will, of course, right? But you see here that Caleb encourages others in the same boldness, you know, to step out into something that the Lord would have for you. So these next verses, 20 through 61, we're not going to read through them. You guys can read through all those names. I'll save you the pain of me reading through them. But just all the cities, right? All the cities of Judah that they inherited, that they possessed, that they should have possessed. But we see that in 63 it says, as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out. But the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. So we see that in this place, Jerusalem, where the Jebusites would live, they, you know, which were Canaanites, right? They didn't push them out of that land, so, or that city. Why didn't they? You know, the Canaanites, they had a desire to stay in that city. And you could say they had a desire that was more than Israel had or the tribe of Judah had to push them out of that city. And we see that the Canaanites actually stay within Jerusalem up to David's time of reigning. Right? So quite a few years later, they're still remaining there. You know, so did they possess the land? Portions of it, but they allowed their inheritance not to be fully possessed, you know, because they didn't fully or wholly follow the Lord in that area, you know. So, chapter 16, we see the inheritance here of Joseph's sons. And it says, the lot fell on the children of Joseph from the Jordan by Jericho to the rivers of Jericho at the east, on the east, to the wilderness that goes up from Jericho through the mountains to Bethel, then went out to Bethel to Luz, passing along to the borders of the Archites at Ataroth, and went down westward to the borders of the Jephthalites as far as the boundary of the lower Beth Horon to Gezer, and it ended at the sea. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, took their inheritance. So the borders of the providence here belong to the sons of Joseph. So that was Ephraim, right? And half the tribe of Manasseh that was settling on the west side. The other half, of course, we see settling on the east side of the Jordan. The borders of the children of Ephraim, verse 5, according to their families, thus the borders of their inheritance on the east side of Ataroth Adar, as far as the upper Beth Horon,
And the borders went out towards the sea on the north side of, you can name that city. And then the borders went aside eastward to Tanath, Shiloh, and passed by it to the east of Janahan. Then it went down to Janahan to Etharoth and Nahara, reaching to Jericho, and came out at the Jordan. The borders went out from Tapua westward to the brook of Kenna, and it ended at the sea. This was the inheritance of the tribe of Ephraim according to their family. The separate the cities of the children of Ephraim went among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities of their villages. And it did not drive out the Canaanites, and they did not drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites to this day and have become forced laborers. So, again, another failure on the tribe here of Ephraim and Manasseh to drive out those Canaanites out of the land. And, you know, you might ask, why is it so important that they did that? But, you know, Israel struggled with just idolatry and false deity and all that stuff, you know, that they through the ages they've struggled with it. And so the failure to do so just left them in place in the land, and it became an influence to their descendants, right? And an influence to their children, right? Throughout the ages. So it's even common amongst, I think, amongst us Christians, right? Why don't we dismiss sin out of our lives? You know, why do we allow certain things to take place? Why do we cling to pagan ideas and pagan things? You know, I think of all the nonsense about the yoga and stuff within the body of Christ, and that's all New Age and all Hindu, coming out of Hindu religions and, you know, stuff. And it's like, why are we allowing that's the spiritual stuff like that to be in our midst, you know? And why don't we fight back from that? Why don't we dismiss that, you know? Well, the Israelites didn't dismiss it, and they struggled with things coming in to their midst that weren't godly, you know? And so today, I think, you know, just pagan ideas, worldly things, what are some of the compromises in our own lives that we have? Right? What do we've allowed to seep in, you know? One of the things that drives me crazy is Easter egg hunts. Easter egg hunts just drive me crazy. Why? Because they're pagan. And we allow that to come into church? I just don't get it, you know? And, you know, and I think of how it distorts the truth. All of a sudden our kids are so enamored by the candy and the bunnies and the baskets and stuff, and they're not enamored by Jesus, the one who died for them and rose again and wants a personal relationship with them. They've forgotten all about that. You know, if we allow that kind of stuff to come in, and it's not, and you know what? It's, God doesn't define that as legalism. He defines that as holy, growing in holiness. You know, sanctification, it's part of growing closer to Him, you know, to dismiss some of these things that just that we bow down to in a sense, right? I think it's a compromise, and perhaps, there's probably too much of it within the church body itself, even today.
But you know, one of the things that you always hear is, why do people put up with things that they don't agree with? Right? Why do we put up with things that we don't agree with? Why do we put up with family members that continue to bring curse against the Lord, you know, continue to use the name of the Lord and in ways that they shouldn't, and we put up with it. And we kind of stand there and we kind of take it on the chin, and sometimes we don't say anything about it, you know. Why do we put up with it? Well, it's because we want peace, right? We want peace in the house. I'll tell you what one of my things is with my kids. Is like, why do I put up with certain things that they shouldn't do? Like, what if they're acting a certain way, right? Why do I put up with that? Because I want peace. I kind of say, well, you know what? I'm not going to say anything this time because I don't want it to become a big, you know, fight or whatever. I'm just going to not say anything. Is that the right thing to do? Not really. You know, do you want real peace? Or do you want just this superficial peace, right? I think it's important that we stand up for what we believe. And I think when we look at Caleb, I think we ought to go for it. I go for it, you know? And so I think, are we going to be the minority? Yeah, we probably will be a minority when we start standing up for some of these things that are or against some of these things that are wrong. The other reason that they did it was for the sake of money, right? I mean, some of these folks, they economically, it made sense. We can have laborers. It was for the sake of comfort too, right? We can have laborers and therefore we don't have to labor as hard. Or we can labor hard and they can labor hard and we can reap the benefit. We can be wealthy through it. So sometimes we put up with things just from the standpoint of wealth, you know, like, you know, if you go to work and it's unethical and what they're doing, and we can put up with it sometimes, and we can look past it and say, you know, I'm just going to put in my 40 hours and get out of here, rather than saying I disagree with that, you know. We were talking about the other day, I think me and Adam were talking about how at one time a boss of his told him to lie. He said, I can't say that. Why can't you say that? It's not the truth. Yeah, but all I'm saying is just tell her that, so you know. Wait a minute. Are we wholehearted? Or are we half-hearted? You know? So I think it's sometimes we just have to stand up, you know? We have to stand up, and I think that's what Caleb did. Even though he was in danger of standing alone, he stood up. Right? So I think if anything, just, you know, the study, I know there's a lot of names and the boundaries and all this stuff, but if we look at just Caleb for a minute, about him being wholehearted, I think we have some place to learn from. You know, I know I do. I know I do. I need to stand my ground sometimes, you know, more than I do. In my family and in the church probably too, you know. You don't know how many people I've wanted to say something to. And I probably should have said something to them. But I didn't. You know why? I wanted to hold the peace. You know. But there's a time when you got to step up and you got to say, you know what? This is what the Lord says. Like it or not, this is what the Lord says.